I take it that these buttons here, if you push them up, they're on, and back, they're off.
Pull them down towards you, and the microphone's on.
Oh, you pull them down. I see. Well, you change that around to confuse us. We don't need that.
Keep you on your toes.
All right, the State Affairs meeting has come to order. The members in attendance this afternoon are Representative Miller, Representative Locker, Representative Ward, Representative Schultz, and Representative Larson, and myself, Representative Abood is chair. Today's bill will be, hearing will be House Bill 456, an act authorizing an advisory vote by the qualified voters of the state on the question of the election of the Attorney General. I'm going to, in the order in which they'll be appearing, sounds like a floor show, but it isn't, will be Representative Ward, who is the prime sponsor. The Attorney General Gorsuch will be down here also. I see some of his people here from the Attorney General's office. Also, I'd like to welcome Ed Boyko, who is now in San Diego, standing by and listening. He wishes to testify. We'll be opening up the circuit to him and be able to listen to his testimony as we get through. I hope your weather down there is, Ed's, a lot better than we have up here today. For the prime sponsor, would you care to make your statements, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
If you'll take the witness stand up there, please. I would remind you while he's sitting down to watch when you do speak, if you'll push your buttons and turn them off when you're through, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. My name is Representative Jerry Ward. I represent District 13 in Anchorage, Alaska. I am the prime sponsor of House Bill number 456, which is to place before the voters in the next general election whether or not the Attorney General for the state of Alaska should be an elected position. I fully agree and support the concept of an elected Attorney General, as well as 74%, according to the last polls that I was able to do, which I voted in favor of it too. Well, I happened to be one of the random checks. But 74% of the people in my district in Anchorage support the concept of an elected Attorney General, and we are one of the lowest on a central basis to support them. The rest of the states are a little higher percentage than that. So I think what we have here is where, at least in my opinion, government has proceeded on under an obsolete formula of appointed. There's only 43 states have an elected position for Attorney General. There are seven of them that run under the ideal that it should be an appointed attorney, and Alaska is still one of them, and I think it's come time that we come of age to where we have an attorney for the citizens of the state of Alaska, where right now within our ordinary constitution, the elected Attorney General's part is an employee of the governor of the state of Alaska. I think that the governor should have employees. I think the governor should have an attorney that he can rely upon for legal counsel and trying to get his policies and goals throughout the system. Although I don't believe this should be an Attorney General, I would like the Attorney General who works to work for the people of Alaska and be accountable to the people of Alaska directly. And I believe this can only be done through an election process, the same way as it's with you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. We're responsible to the people that elect us. And I believe that this is a proper thing, and I think that we should join the other 43 states and putting this question before the voters, and I am absolutely certain that it will pass unanimously with a great deal of support for people that believe that this system is the best. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions that there may be about the bill itself or any of the things that go along with it.
Are there any questions from the committee? Mr. Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Ward, I know during the latter part of the session last year, we did pass a bill that referred to the election of the Attorney General. How does your bill here differ than that time?
The bill, which I was the co-sponsor of that bill that passed, was put forth a constitutional amendment which would place it on the ballot to make it into a constitutional amendment. What this does, this puts an advisory vote for the purpose of getting a response from the public, because I don't wish to throw whatever the reasoning was, the other body turned down the constitutional amendment. They of course have their constituencies and they will answer accordingly, which maybe their reading is different than mine, although I don't see how, but for some reason the people that elected them apparently didn't want an attorney general, elected attorney general. The people that elected me do want an elected attorney general. So I think we need to go before the people one more time so that both bodies and the administration will have a very clear message on exactly what the Alaska people want. And there's nothing quite as clear as being told. And I think that's what we have the process for.
Thank you.
Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ward, under the terms of the ballot proposition that your bill here was put forward, would the Attorney General be elected for a two-year, four-year, or six-year term?
Under the terms that I have now, that would be whether or not to have an elected. We have a four-year term currently within the state. There is only one other state that currently has a two-year elected position, and that is Virginia, I believe, within the backup, it was in the package there. So it would be for a four-year term, but that in itself would be, in my opinion, it would be for a four-year term.
It doesn't say so, however, in the proposition that you put there.
No, it doesn't. It also doesn't say whether or not it's going to be a man, woman, Libertarian, Republican, or Democrat. What we're saying is, do you want a responsible elected position, or do you want an appointed position that's beholden to whoever hired them?
And you brought up an interesting point when you talked about the Democrat, Republican, or Libertarian. Would this be a partisan or a nonpartisan Attorney General that would be voting on here if we put this ballot before the people?
That would be up to the determination of the legislature. This here is to send a message to the legislature, because I'm not sure how the individual representatives in this room voted, but 27 of them did vote that they encouraged the election of Attorney General. That was on their nonpartisan basis. The other body seemed to have missed the wishes of the people of the state of Alaska, and I think that this would send a clear signal to them that would still be up to interpretation and legislation that would go through the process.
In other words, what we're doing is that we're asking, would you, the ballot question could be phrased this way then. Do you want to elect Attorney General, the length of whose term is not before us, is unknown, the duties of whom are not specified, and whose partisan or nonpartisan nature has not been specified. And in other words, Mr. Chairman, I submit we're authorizing sort of a pig and a poke in this thing.
If I may, Mr. Chairman. Yes,
Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you phrase it in that manner, I couldn't agree with you more. Of course, I don't believe that anybody in my district will lack an understanding of a yes or no question. They've had enough tricky questions on ballot propositions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ward.
Mr. Chairman, could I just respond briefly to that?
In a moment, please. Well, okay, if you wish to respond, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I submit to you that this is indeed one of the original tricky questions, because it's just saying, would you like to have it in anything, and with no specificity. If you're serious about putting a proposition before the people, I submit that the people ought to have specifically what you have in mind before them, not just say, would you like to have a candy bar, or would you like to have a yacht or something like that. I think what is needed, if we're going to be serious about this proposition, is some specificity so that the people will have some idea of what they're voting on. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. It appears from the conversation of you two gentlemen that you're both right and you're both wrong, from where I can see it. We're putting, what this does is put in front of the people an advisory vote as to whether they want to elect or not elect an attorney general, be he Republican, Democrat, Green, Pink, whatever. Now, within the scope of that, it would appear to me that that's all we're giving the and where it should be, the people the right to choose whether they want to elect one for their representation, or to continue with the appointment of it, or not for their representation. And that's precisely what all it comes down to. I think that within the wisdom of the balance of this, when we get through with this bill, we'll probably come up and it more than likely would appear to be a nonpartisan. He can be a man or a woman, It can be, he can wear black clothes or green clothes. If we've got to go down to that extent of it, then you're right. This is a pig in the poke. We shouldn't even be doing it. But I don't think this is the way we should be approaching it. That is a silly way to approach it, in my opinion, if we were to do it that way. And I'm sure in your wisdom, you wouldn't want to see that happen. Mr. Miller?
Mr. Speaker, you're quite correct. I don't want to see that happen. That's what I'm not disposed to vote for this particular bill. But I submit it to you again, Mr. Chairman, that the a person who's making a vote, who's going to cast his vote, needs to know whether he's casting a vote for a partisan or a nonpartisan attorney general. He needs to know whether it's going to come every 4 years in the same election that the governor's election comes up, or whether it's going to come up every 2 years, like the House of Representatives elections come up, or whether it's going to come up, as has been suggested sometimes, every 6 years, so that you can minimize the built-in conflict that will exist between the attorney general and the governor's office. I'm just saying, Mr. Chairman, that if we're going to put this proposition out to the voters, we owe them the courtesy of telling them approximately what we're talking about when we use this word attorney general. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That may be something the committee could come up on, some type of a amendment or something to it as we get into the work session of it. Yes, are there any further questions for Mr. Ward?
Yes.
Representative Locker? Would you use your mic, please, and speak into the mic? Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Ward, I, like you, voted for the election of the Attorney General, or at least the legislation that would allow the election if it passed the voters. And I am somewhat concerned about this piece of legislation because I know that you've done your homework. I read the packet. Nowhere did I see the history of the legislature when it comes to acting affirmatively on advisory votes. And what I see this piece of legislation possibly doing is cooling the heels of the voters, if you will, letting them think that their advisory vote, because they're actually voting on whether or not we're going to have an attorney general. And, you know, that will be a year or so before that return comes in. And then the next 2 years will be spent in the legislature by people like yourself and myself and other supporters, if we're lucky enough to be reelected, to try to get the legislation through again. The same 27 votes needed on this side, another election. I see our people just being rather discouraged. Are we whipping a dead horse to death? Is now the time for this?
Yes, thank you.
Representative Ward.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Blocker, I can agree with you more. I'd love to have the 27 votes on this side and enough on the other side and have the governor sign it. But there's apparently some people that because of where they're representing or their philosophical beliefs, refuse to at least consider my district. 75% of them say that they want an elected attorney general. Very simple. I have to go forth in whatever manner I can to accomplish. This is one of the strongest issues of my district. My district says they want to elect their attorney general that's issuing opinions on their behalf. They don't want him appointed or her appointed. It's as simple as that. I'll do whatever I can to get that accomplished. And I believe that other people that like it the way it has been for the last 25 years are going to do everything they can to keep it that way. And I'm sure we can get us another task force and come up with a $3.2 billion move cost or whatever it is. This is yes or no. And it's on the right track. I'm going to vote yes again. I voted yes on lots of stuff. And a lot of those things haven't happened, but that's what we do in this system. The ballot box is the right. And to confuse the questions, or not to even ask the questions, I think is wrong.
Are there any further questions for the witness? Mr. Miller.
Mr. Chairman, would you agree with me, Mr. Ward, that this office, if it was created, would be the second most powerful political office in the state of Alaska?
Mr. Ward.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I believe that it would be one of the most powerful offices in the state of Alaska, yes.
Well, that wasn't quite what I asked you. I asked if you would agree with me it would probably be the second most powerful.
Well, I'm not sure it's a priority. I believe that my District 13 is the most powerful, and then we go from there down. So I just don't know. If you're trying to, is it a controversy? Are they going to be as powerful as the governor? No, they're not going to work for the governor. I would hope not anyway. I hope that they don't work for the legislature only either. I hope they work for the people of the state of Alaska, where right now the Attorney General's office does not work for you, does not work for the people of the state of Alaska, but yet issues opinions for the policies for the administration of the state of Alaska. The Attorney General's office works for the governor by statute.
Mr. Chairman, I'll only take 30 seconds to dispute that. I think the Attorney General works for me very well as a dedicated public servant. But that aside, the point I'm trying to make, Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to get an answer on this, would this be the second most important or powerful elected public office after the governor? My submission is that it would be the second most powerful, and that indeed the conflict would just be absolutely built in for there to be a constant rivalry, conflict, and very strong warfare almost, and this is demonstrated in many states, between the Attorney General's office and the governor's office. I'd like to know how, if we accomplish this, elected Attorney General, you would work to minimize those built-in conflicts. That's why I was curious if it was perhaps going to be a nonpartisan office or something like that.
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ward, we could go on with the conflict between you and Representative Miller here all afternoon. I would like to hear some of the witnesses.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will try. I was almost ready to change his opinion. Oh, I thought it was close.
Well, you'll have your opportunity.
Mr. Chairman.
You will have, one moment, please. You'll have your opportunity after we listen to some witnesses.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Ward.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Locker.
Yes, thank you. Representative Ward did not answer one of my questions, and I tried to research it myself, and I'm wondering...
Excuse me for interrupting, if I may. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to hear the other witnesses. The Attorney General is here in respect of his time. You will have that opportunity to answer that question as soon as I hear the witnesses, because we'll be going to 3 o'clock anyway. If you'd allow me that privilege, I'd appreciate that.
Your committee, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, ma'am. I'm quite aware of that. Thank you. I know Mr. Larson has a question, and you can hold that until a few moments, I presume. I know it's the Attorney General Gorsuch is here. Would you care to make a few statements, Mr. Gorsuch?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Gorsuch, would you push the button up so that you could be... Which way do you go there?
Here.
Yeah, and if you'll identify yourself and affiliation for the record, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Norman Gorsuch, and I'm the Attorney General. And I am here today to share with you my thoughts on this fundamental issue. First, for the record, I am not here opposing the... opportunity that the people should have to vote in an advisory vote on whether or not the office should be elected. But I do think, as part and parcel of any such bill, there should be an underlying discussion of the merits of the very proposition that people will be called upon to have a voice upon. I'd like to summarize, and I hope that the letter I sent to you has been made available and copied and distributed, which goes into some more detail with respect to my reasons for opposing the election of the Attorney General. And if, with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I would just simply like to summarize, if I may, the contents of that letter, and then I had a few other additional thoughts I'd like to convey to you, and then I'd certainly be available for questions.
Mr. Gorsuch, I can assure you that that letter has been entered into the... Each member has a record of it, and it's entered into the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'd like to say, as a matter of background, that I have lived and practiced law in our state for most of my adult life. And as a practical matter, for the record, historically the Attorney General's office is an appointive rather than an elective office. The Attorney General's office, as it was conceived by the King of England and as it developed in the colonies, was an appointive office. And of course, the President today still appoints the Attorney General in the federal government. I believe that fundamentally what is being addressed here is the question of whether or not the strong executive concept contained in the Alaska Constitution should be continued. As a very practical matter, I think good management requires that the governor be able to appoint the attorney general, and that the Department of Law be a adjunct of and the attorney for the executive branch. Because I think that what that does is it combines one of the key elements of management, namely the provision of legal services, legal advice, and the representation of litigation within a department that is part and parcel and under the control of the governor. And I think that's important because, after all, what we're talking about here is political accountability to the people. And basically, the accountability of the executive branch of state government is in one person, and that person is the elected governor. When we begin to fractionate that authority by electing more than the governor, we begin to diffuse that accountability. We set up situations in which the public, and I might add the legislature, is unable to determine exactly who is right and who is wrong, or even if there is a disagreement, whom they should hold accountable for the actions of the executive branch. I think that it's a basic principle of the Alaska state constitution that the people should be able to elect one person, and by that election change the policies, the course, and the scope of the executive branch of government. I also believe, however, that the Attorney General's office, as it now functions, is not only performing the functions that many people say would be appointed by or are performed by an elected Attorney General, but it performs them at lower cost and also with less delay, less obfuscation, less heat shifting, less finger pointing, because that's what you have when you have multiple elected executives. I would like to use a few anecdotal illustrations, if I may, of what can happen in states where the Attorney General is elected. There was a case recently in the National Attorney General's report, which I received, which delineated a dispute between the governor and his Attorney General in a state in which the Attorney General is elected. It seems that the governor decided to charge admission fees for public tours of the governor's mansion in that state. The Attorney General was suing the governor, seeking an injunction to prevent the governor from charging admission fees to tour the mansion on the grounds that it was a public building, and therefore, in that circumstance, the public was entitled to a free tour rather than a tour for which they had to pay a fee. Now, that is in a jurisdiction in which the Attorney General is elected. In the state where the Attorney General is appointed, the governor's office would simply check with the Attorney General, find out if and when that problem existed, and then it would be resolved through internal legal advice given by the Attorney General's office. Either you could, you couldn't, or maybe you need to pass some legislation to authorize. I think that in that state where the Attorney General is elected, there are attorneys in the Attorney General's office grinding out briefs and complaints. The governor's attorneys are grinding up answers and motions, and public funds are being spent to litigate what I think is a rather silly dispute that could be resolved through a simple discussion between the parties. I think that we cannot address this issue without addressing it in terms of human nature and the way government works. And when you have a competing elected executive, that person has an independent base and does not have to cooperate with the other branches, with the other departments of state government, and accommodate their needs with respect to legal advice or litigation. I think that what happens in states in which there is an elected attorney general is that, first of all, the governors in those states generally establish and hire a general counsel in their governor's office to draft their legislation and to give them legal advice and to deal with potentially litigation. And also in those states, the various department chiefs who are appointed by the governor also hire their own house counsel because there is not the kind of trust and the kind of working relationship that allows them to depend solely upon the attorney general for advice. What happens is, of course, there are disputes. Those disputes are aired frequently, publicly, to the detriment of the efficient dispatch of state business, and to a quicker response to concerns expressed by members of the public or the legislature. In addition, these additional lawyers cost money. And that means an additional layer of lawyers is embedded in state government, in the governor's office and in the other state departments. This is what happens in states where an attorney general is elected, and is almost uniformly the case. I think that in some states where the personalities and philosophies of the elected attorney general and the governor coincide, there is a relatively harmonious working relationship. But those happen infrequently and occasionally, which is at least my experience in my discussions with my fellow attorneys general at the various meetings I occasionally attend. I think that in addition, there are some other considerations which I would like to address. Typically in states in which there is House counsel, the House counsel file amicus briefs on issues pending in court. Usually in these states in which the Attorney General is elected, the House counsel are barred from litigating and representing the state in court. But nevertheless, that does not prohibit them from filing what we call amicus briefs on various public policy issues. In some states, there may be the Attorney General's brief, and then two or three or more briefs filed by House counsel for the agencies of the governor on the same issue with differing opinions. This can only serve to confuse the court with respect to state policy. I think that in the final analysis, the general argument that I constantly hear about electing an attorney general is that the attorney general should work for the people. Well, through being appointed by the governor and the governor who works for the people, there is the same kind of relationship. For example, in this state, since the early 1970s, we have had a very vigorous and active consumer protection section, which has not hesitated to take on anyone with which, in our judgment, it was not complying with the consumer protection statutes, our state antitrust laws, and other similar regulatory statutes. In addition, the other argument that's frequently made is that, well, the Attorney General would fight for the people against the bureaucracy. I think that we're here dealing with a perception problem rather than a real problem. The fact is, since the Attorney General in this state is not elected, means that the Attorney General in the state works cooperatively with other departments and agencies to resolve the legal problems that may exist. For example, one of the primary functions of the Attorney General's office, whether in an appointed position or in an elected position, is to police the state agencies. And by that, I mean to make sure that those state agencies comply with the statutes which you pass, which enable them to do what they are to do, and also to ensure that those statutes are properly implemented through regulations. In addition, one of the things that the Attorney General's office does is advise agencies on whether or not appropriate fairness and due process was extended to applicants and personnel within and without government when they deal with the state agencies on questions involving privileges, rights, immunities, permits, applications, and so forth. And that corrective process is done quietly and efficiently through the advice rendered by the Attorney General's office to the agencies. And those agencies, again, adjust their behavior or their activities accordingly in order to comply with the legal advice given by the Department of Law. That is a quiet, ongoing process that takes place continuously. Now, the difference is, in states where the Attorney General is elected, it is necessary for the Attorney General to notify the public on a regular basis every time he does this, he or she does this. The result is, of course, there is a perception built up that the Attorney General is always vigorously guarding the rights of the public vis-a-vis these agencies. I think it is a perception problem, not a real problem. In this state and in other states where the Attorney General is appointed, the Attorney General's office performs the same function, only we work quietly in an appointed state with our fellow appointed cabinet members, thereby, we believe, encouraging harmony and a better working relationship within state government, and at the same time, more quickly and efficiently correcting those errors and dealing the state government has with the public. So I think that in reality, the benefits of electing the Attorney General, I think, are illusory. I believe that in the final analysis, the results of electing the Attorney General produce, and I would like to summarize my last paragraph in the letter, it is my opinion that electing the Attorney General will split administrative responsibility and executive authority, diffuse the political accountability of the executive branch to the public, add more attorneys to state government, contribute to more intense bureaucratic infighting among agencies, delay the resolution of executive branch policy decisions, and create a higher rate of growth in the state operating budget through the retention of the additional attorneys in the various agencies and in the government. So in summary, Mr. Chairman, I have no particular comments on the underlying merits of whatever amendment the legislature may seek to adopt, if in fact you do so as a result of this bill or the election. I do think that in the event that the legislature does begin to consider such amendments, I would certainly be pleased to offer my constructive comments to you as you shape those, so that in the event you seek to pursue this further, I certainly would do what I could to cooperate with you. But as I say, I fundamentally believe that for many policy reasons, I think that electing the Attorney General is not as not the beneficial not the beneficial result that I think most people are seeking.
General, your amendments or anything you wish to submit to this committee would be very welcome. If you care to do that, we appreciate that very much. Or are you going to stay in attendance here for a few minutes so committee members may address anything to you as your time allows?
I would be happy to answer questions.
Allow me then to go to San Francisco or San Diego to a person standing by down there that wishes to testify.
I'll be glad to.
Thank you. You'll just stay right there, sir. We'll get to what you dial, please. Mr.
This is Edgar Paul Boyko. Can you hear me?
I believe reach you loud and clear for the audience. This is the former Alaska Attorney General Paul Boyko was in San Diego. Go ahead, Mr. Boyko.
Slight correction. I live in Anchorage, sir, and I do spend some time in San Diego in pursuit of my profession, but I thank you anyway. I would like to say, for the benefit of those members of the committee who are not acquainted with me, that I have been a resident of the state of Alaska for 32 years. And I've been a member of the Alaska Bar and practiced law in Alaska for 31 out of those 32 years. I've also practiced in two other states, the state of Maryland and the state of California, both of which have elected attorneys general. So I've had a pretty good opportunity to make comparisons of the systems. I served as the Attorney General of Alaska in a bipartisan cabinet under Governor Walter J. Hickel in 1967 and 1968. I've held other public offices which I will not bore you at this time. First of all, I listened with considerable interest to Mr. Gorsuch's testimony, and I find myself, first of all, responding in this fashion that I thought it was very astute on his part to open his remarks that he is not opposed to the people voting on the proposition as to whether or not they want an elected attorney general. And yet, it seems to me the thrust of his testimony would be that he does not want this bill to pass, which would do precisely that, allow the people that opportunity, because if the bill before this committee does pass, all it will do is get an advisory vote. So why, at this time, make a big issue of what obviously is a controversial proposal? Obviously, there are people for and people against. And why debate the merits after you've already said, certainly the people have a right to know what they're, to vote on this? Seems to me the time to educate the people on the merits is after this bill has passed, and the matter is then before the people for it vote until they can make an intelligent decision. That would be the time to do that. And that also addresses what Representative Lacker said, if I may. I feel that because the present administration is on record as opposing the election of the Attorney General. The legislature, or those of you who favor this kind of constitutional amendment, have two choices. You can sit back and do nothing and hope that the future administrations will be of a different mind, or you can educate the people who constitute the present administration by demonstrating what I believe will be the overwhelming support of the electorate, which may change the minds of those both in the legislature and out of the legislature who presently are opposed to the constitutional amendment. So much for the merits of the bill itself, which seems to me does not involve whether an elected attorney general is good or bad, merely whether the people should have a say in whether such a proposal should be put on the ballot as a constitutional amendment. But since the matter was addressed, if you wish to hear from me on the merits, I'll be glad to say it very briefly. I would like to say that while I held the office under a gubernatorial appointment and uninterruptedly since then, I have been strongly of the belief that the appointment of the Attorney General in Alaska is one of several very severe mistakes which were made when we adopted the Constitution in 1956, and that we have paid a very high price for some of these mistakes. Basically, my reasons for believing that an elected Attorney General would be a great improvement in Alaska are as follows. Number one, Alaska now has the most powerful chief executive of any state in terms of his powers under the Constitution. And the only reason we haven't suffered from that situation in the past is because, at least until recently, most governors have exercised these powers with a great deal of restraint. Whether the present incumbent will do that is something on which the jury is still out. But there is certainly the potential of enormous abuse at the expense of the legislature, at the expense of the judiciary, and at the expense of the people. There are no checks and balances on the executive power, which are of equal force or equal power, and therefore this is a very dangerous situation. But this dangerous situation is further exacerbated by a very unique feature of the Alaska Constitution. If I'm correct, only about 14 out of the 50 states have appointed attorneys general. The rest of them are elected. But of those 14 states, only one other state, the state of Delaware, gives the attorney general complete power over the enforcement of the criminal laws, as is the case in Alaska. In Alaska, the attorney general has administrative power over the district attorneys. It has an office of special prosecutions and a chief prosecutor who is the number two man in sense of power in the Department of Law. And therefore, they control the criminal phase of the law enforcement. They are in charge of grand juries and all the panoply of awesome power. And in recent years, we have seen that power in operation and applied against people who have fallen from favor politically. And I will not go into any specifics at this time unless I'm asked. Okay? Now, given the combination of the enormous power of the governor plus the enormous power of the attorney general shared by only one other attorney general in the United States, in the various United States, I think the potential for abuse is incredible. Now, as I listen to Mr. Gorsuch's arguments, well-formulated arguments in favor of the appointed attorney general, it occurred to me that by using the same facts but putting different words on them, you could make an equally powerful argument in favor of the elected attorney general. First of all, historically, yes, indeed, the King of England did appoint the attorney general. I would hardly like to think that the powers of the absolute monarchy in England prior to the American Revolution is a very good historical example to follow in a state of the Union. Number two, yes, the president to this day appoints the attorney general. And we have very recently observed the abuses that can spring from that during the late and lamented Watergate crisis, when the Attorney General and his and his next number two in command had to resign, and finally number three did the bidding of a president who was fighting the legitimate powers of the Congress and of the judiciary. This is precisely an example of why the appointed attorney general is an undesirable element of government of the free people. Also, historically, we don't have to go back to the King of England. In the territory of Alaska, the attorney general was elected, as was the governor, and the governor was not. The attorney general was elected, and I believe it was the highway engineer was elected, and it didn't hurt anything. It worked pretty good. The only thing is, naturally, we wanted statehood, we wanted to elect our own governor, and in the process, we went overboard and discarded the elected attorney general. So historically, the attorney general in Alaska has been elected in the past without any of the terrible consequences which Mr. Gorsuch suggests. In addition to the powers which I've already suggested, the Department of Law has further enormous powers through its official opinions, which more or less control the conduct of the executive branch. The criminal law enforcement, I've already hinted at. And of course, the Attorney General has a great deal of influence on the governor in the selection of judicial appointments. So here again, the power of the Attorney General, who is at the beck and call of the governor, and can be hired and fired by the governor, at whose pleasure he serves, is incredibly great in Alaska, and there is no concomitant accountability to the people. The only person who is accountable is the governor. And that is hardly the way to focus public attention on the strengths and weaknesses of government. Mr. Gorsuch talks about diffusion of accountability. Why, that's about like saying let's not elect separate members of the legislature. That diffuses responsibility. Let's have a slate, and the party that gets the most votes puts up all the seats with its own selection. That would be less diffused accountability, but hardly more democratic. Now, one other point here. Mr. Gorsuch says human nature would bring confrontations between the attorney general and the governor and his lawyers. That's probably true. Human nature also tells us that when a person's continued tenure in a very important job, and it is certainly an important step in a lawyer's career to be the attorney general, when his continued tenure depends on the whim of the governor, he is not very likely to oppose the governor's arbitrary actions, whether he deems them legal or not, for fear that he's going to get fired and it's going to be a reflection upon his career. Versus Gorsuch, which is an example of the same confrontation that Mr. Gorsuch suggests would be avoided by having an appointed attorney general. Likewise, what he says could apply to the courts. You may remember that in the 60s, litigation was brought by the then Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court, Mr. Buell Nesbitt, against the governor because somebody in the governor's budget committee had stricken from the judicial budget an item of coffee and donuts for grand jurors, and the Chief Justice took umbrage at that and had one of his assistants bring a lawsuit. Now, I presume from that it could be argued that therefore the judges should all be under the governor to avoid this kind of petty litigation. So obviously, that argument doesn't carry very much weight. Now let me come back to my basic premise. I don't know that you can decide at this hearing who is right and who is wrong. Mr. Gorsuch has made arguments in favor of the appointed attorney general. I have made some arguments in favor of the elected attorney general. There are more arguments that can be made, other considerations that apply. But the issue before you is not whether you should now vote for or against an elected attorney general, but whether you should allow your constituents to express
express their preference for the guidance of those whom they have elected and whose job it is to amend the Constitution when the time has come. And it seems to me, regardless of who has the better argument, unless you feel it is totally frivolous, and I certainly don't think anybody has suggested that, because obviously about 36 states think that's the right way to go, and only 14 disagree. In the absence of any finding that it's frivolous, it seems to me that people certainly should be allowed to express their preference, and this would be the best way in the public forum to debate those things which Mr. Gorsuch and I have touched upon, namely, which is the better system and what should we do. I thank you for your courtesy in allowing me to testify, and if I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to do so. I would request that anybody who addresses a question to me, please use the microphones because I cannot pick up your voices otherwise. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Boyko. I would allow Mr. Gorsuch to answer any questions or ask any questions of Mr. Boyko if you care to do it, Mr. Gorsuch, in that your name was mentioned. And I ought to ask a couple because my name was too, come think about it.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have any...
With every respect, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Boyko. Mr. Gorsuch?
Yes, I would say that Mr. Boyko, I believe, has very capably outlined the other side of the argument. And I think basically if we reach the bottom line on this particular issue, it comes down to a question of philosophy. And the philosophy is whether or not the philosophy is the scope and degree of centralized executive...
If anybody is charging, I can't hear it.
Oh. Do you have the button on?
It's down.
It's down. What's down?
I hear nothing.
Push it down.
Here's the phone.
Yeah. There you go.
Is that all right now?
Hello?
Do you hear now, Ed?
No, sir. I have the last thing I heard was your voice, sir.
Tim's got
stand by one. Stand by. Test that mic.
How about now?
Did you get that?
No, sir. I heard Mr. Griffiths loud and clear when he testified before, but I don't hear anything now.
Can we get him another mic? Just stand by 1 minute, Ed. Do you copy me all right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, just stand by. We're changing mics.
Yes,
sir. Should I push the button down? Hello? You hear me?
Yes.
Did you hear that, Ed?
I heard hello.
Do you hear me now, Ed?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I have nothing specific to say in reply other than I think that Mr. Boyko has set forth for you, I believe, some of the fundamental issues and the fundamental questions that accompany the other side of the argument, namely the scope and extent of centralized executive decision-making authority. That is... There are those who agree or believe that the executive branch should have a more diffuse accountability, a more varied accountability through the election of one or more additional constitutional officers in addition to the governor, and he has outlined some of the arguments on the other side of that particular issue and which supports that particular point of view. I have nothing specific to add other than to say that I think that with respect to the question of whether or not the people should vote on this, I think that, as I say, I do not oppose the people having a right to an advisory vote on this, but I do believe that it seems to me it's incumbent upon the legislature to treat this as any other piece of legislation and review carefully the underlying merits of the particular points of view on this issue to aid you in deciding whether to pass this bill or whether to amend the bill with some additional specifics in it so that the people have a understanding of maybe more of where you might be going if you were to consider later a constitutional amendment on this issue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Mr. Gorsuch, I suggested that perhaps you submit any amendments that you feel will make this bill better in the light in which it's written, or in opposite to it. We're very interested in your opinion. Mr. Boyko, committee would also ask you if you had anything to this or wanted to add any testimony to it or amendments to the bill itself. You may be pleased to write. If you'd be right to us, we'd be very pleased.
I see some merit in the points that Representative Miller made, although I also see some problems with his point of view. Because if the legislature were to arbitrarily pick a method for electing the Attorney General, it would automatically alienate some support for the general principle of the elected Attorney General by going contrary to the preferences of those who prefer a different method, who yet might agree on the general principle. Perhaps one of the ways to do that, and I'm suggesting this to the authors of the bill just as a helpful suggestion, would be to amend the bill so as to, in the referendum, to give the people a choice, not only between an elected and an appointed Attorney General, but them to go on and say, if the Attorney General is elected, would you prefer a 2, 4, or 6-year term? Would you prefer partisan or nonpartisan election? And then you have even more specific guidelines that the legislature and the administration would then have to work on. It'd be almost like a public opinion poll, but with the dignity of a vote.
Mr. Miller, would you care to respond? I'm just asking, would you care to respond to that?
No, I appreciate the comment.
Any other response you'd like to Mr. Boyko, Mr. Gorsuch?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Boyko, do you have any other comments, short ones, that you'd like to make to Mr. Gorsuch or the committee?
No, sir. I would invite questions if there are any. If there are not, I would simply like to say in conclusion that I do appreciate this opportunity and the courtesy of the committee and the chair. Allow me to make these comments. I think it's a very, very important issue. And I think whether you're for or against the elected or appointed Attorney General, which is a legitimate point of view, either way, no question about it. Obviously, one side is probably more right than the other, but certainly each side has some arguments. So whether you're for or against it doesn't seem to me to detract anything from the merits of the bill, which invites the public at large, the electorate, which certainly has in the past expressed a great deal of interest in the subject, and a lot of points of view have been expressed in letters to the editor and poll, opinion polls, to give the people a chance to vote on this seems to me to be the right way to move this issue forward, rather than just let it die from lack of attention.
Thank you, Mr. Boyko. Representative Larson has a question for you. Mr. Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This question is quite general in nature. It has to do, I guess, Mr. Boyko, with your definition of the Attorney General. What would you say, philosophically, you believe the powers, the responsibilities, or the duties of the Attorney General are?
Well, thank you, sir. That's a very, very perceptive question, and I appreciate you saying that. You're asking it. Obviously, I'm going to have to be rather abbreviated in my response. But I believe that the Attorney General, ideally, should be the lawyer of the people, the electorate from whom all powers flow under our form of government. Just like in England, where all powers were conceived as flowing from the crown, the legal advisor to the crown, the man who carried out the legal mandates of the absolute monarch was the Attorney General. In our form of government, the people are the source of sovereign power. And in our type of society, which is a society of laws, a government of laws and not of men, expertise in the law is a necessary tool of government. And that's where lawyers come in. Just like government needs experts, let's say, in the field of health or in the field of education, who hold cabinet rank and advise the governor. But when it comes to the law, they cut across all departments. They cut across every branch of the government. And therefore, the people should have in office and elect into office a man or woman who has expertise
the law, was sworn to uphold the Constitution and the laws of the state of Alaska and of the United States of America, and who will advise all branches of government, not just the governor as his private lawyer, but the governor, the legislature, and the judiciary, on his opinions as to the law, represent the state in litigation, see to the faithful enforcement of the laws by the executive under the guidelines of the Constitution and statutes, and so on. And I think that's his job, as I see. And it should be done independently of the whim of the governor, or the governor's immediate staff, or palace guard, if you will, or any other branch of the government. Nobody should be able to dictate to the Attorney General, and if the Attorney General doesn't do his job, then the people should vote him out of office.
Thank you, Mr. Boyko. Are there any questions for Attorney General Gorsuch? Mr. Boyko, thank you very much for your testimony, and if you care to write the committee and relate any to him, we do have it on tape. We'd appreciate it. Again, thank you very much for being in attendance, and goodbye.
Goodbye, sir.
Are there any other questions from the committee to Mr. Gorsuch? Mr. Larson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if I may, and if I'm out of order, please so indicate. Because I'm going back to the Capitol Site Planning Commission, and one of the things that we were told at the very beginning at that time was the Attorney General, of course, was the attorney for the state government, and therefore he was the attorney for the Capitol Site Planning Commission. As we were going through the various proceedings, at times, of course, various legal questions came up. And there were those of us, and I would admit we were probably in the minority on the Capitol Site Planning Commission, that continuously felt that the opinions that the Planning Commission got from the Attorney General is what the governor at that time wanted the Attorney General to come back with, not what the Attorney General determined the law to be. In your earlier testimony, you mentioned something about a perception. Would you say that this paranoia or fear that we had at that time was really a perception that didn't exist? Or is it a genuine fear that some people can have under the case of an appointed attorney general?
Mr. Gorsuch, in that is relating to a certain case, if you wish to answer it, you may. If you do not wish to answer that pertaining to the Capitol Site Commission, you may also reserve your opinion at this point in time.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I did use a prior case before this administration for an example, and that's why I asked if I was out of order.
I want to be sure that he understands.
I obviously would have no way of knowing or being able to refer to the specific facts that you're outlining there. I would say this, though, as a matter of general experience, that the perception of whether or not the Attorney General is right or wrong generally depends upon whether or not the opinion agrees with one's own point of view. And the problem is that, if I may briefly relate a little bit back to your question of Mr. Boyko, I believe that, in fact, that the functions outlined by those who advocate an elected Attorney General are being performed in substance under the existing system. But I think, again, it's a matter of perception. Since the Attorney General does not run for election nor re-election, there is less need for the Attorney General to constantly trumpet each and every triumph. And I think that, to a certain extent, it is part and parcel of a perception. So I would say that, on the other hand, for all practical purposes, the Attorney General at that time could have been an elected Attorney General who was from Juneau, and query what your response would have been then. So,
thank you, Mr. Gorsuch. Does that answer your question, Mr. Larson?
Well, I think so. And in my own mind, or I guess in my own philosophy, Mr. Chairman, the problem that I have is simply that I do feel that the appointed Attorney General is probably ideal. However, I do have the question, is that practical for the state of Alaska in light of some of the fears that the public has indicated in the past?
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Mr. Schultz, did you have a question?
Yes, I have a question. Mr. Attorney General, I was wondering, had the initiative last year passed on the advisory vote that went through that was initiated? Okay, I'm sorry. Had the initiative passed last year, and should this one pass, the legislature, both the House and Senate, would it be your responsibility to write or oversee the writing of the content of the ballot proposition that would be presented to the people?
As I read this bill, and I don't have it exactly in front of me, but as I read it, it's a simple bill that sets up an advisory vote with a question, and in those cases, I believe that this kind of matter has come up before in the with respect to other structural alterations in government. And as I read this kind of particular legislative effort, the question that appears on the ballot would be exactly the one that you have right here in your bill. So you are determining what will go on this ballot.
Thank you, Mr. Gorsuch. Any other further questions for Mr. Gorsuch from the committee? Mr. Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one, and I've got, you mentioned the King. Did the King behead his Attorney General for issuing the wrong opinion at one time?
I cannot recall any particular situation like that. I think in our system of government, perhaps the remedy might be less drastic.
Mr. Ward, I think it was the messenger you're speaking of, not the Attorney General. They got well through a lot of messengers. Are there any further questions from the Attorney General? Mr. Schultz?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one other question. You referred to lower costs if we had an elected Attorney General or with an appointed. What kind of a budget do you have this year, and what would you anticipate if there was an elected Attorney General? How much increase would you see in the Attorney General's office as a result of it being elected and the increase in number of employees, which you referred to?
Let me give you a little background. The current budget this year is approximately about $16 million in general funds with respect to the operation of the department. It's about $22 when you count interagency receipts, which is no increase in general funds. I would say this, that to a large extent, that question depends upon how, if in fact you do craft a constitutional amendment, and in fact it is adopted by the people, then the question would become how the office itself would be structured, what powers, for example, would be contained in the constitutional amendment, what powers would you give the Attorney General, what powers would you give him or her by statute. But I think what I was referring to most specifically there is this. I would see initially probably no change in the budget of the Attorney General's office itself. What I would see, however, is the creation of attorney positions in the governor's office and in the various state departments, as I have alluded to, which in and of itself would increase the cost of operation of the governor's office and the other state departments, because you would quickly find that the governor and the other agency heads would want to have a second opinion on issues and therefore probably retain their own attorneys. So I was referring to what I perceive as an increase. In my letter, we did a little fiscal analysis in my department, and we believe that within a few years, the additional costs in the governor's office and the various departments would be more than $1 million annually and probably continue to increase over the years.
Thank you, Mr. Gorsuch. Mr. Miller.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to follow up on that because I've been doing roughly the same...
Put your mic down.
I've been doing roughly the same arithmetic. The only difference I would have with what the Attorney General just said is I don't think it would take very many years. We have 15 departments right now. If those departments only hired one legal advisor each, and of course that wouldn't even include the governor's office, he would have to, I imagine, have to hire a whole bunch of attorneys himself. I mean, it would just absolutely be mandated. There's just no way you could get around it. But totally ignoring the extra expense of the governor's office, if each of those departments just hired one each, at $60,000, and incidentally, you don't get an attorney for $60,000. Just that much is $900,000 right there. In other words, we're almost to $1 million in
and we haven't been realistic about the cost of an attorney. By the time you add benefits and everything else in there, you're probably talking about 30% more than that. So it's interesting to put these questions before the people, but I think perhaps maybe as an amendment we should add, shall the legislature, at an additional cost of at least $1.5 million each year, propose a constitutional amendment that would permit the election of the Attorney General. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It would appear to me that if you were put the question in front of the public, I think the public would say, yes, let's spend $2 million. At least we have representation now. Mr. Billy, you may respond.
I was just going to say, Mr. Chairman, that, I won't say it.
Thank you for that. Are there any other questions for the Attorney General? Yes, Mr.
No additional questions, but just in response to maybe the Attorney General and Representative Miller on that, I don't see that there's anything that can actually be proven on that. In fact, I would say that if you have an elected Attorney General, and this is my opinion, you can go ahead and put facts and figures to yours, but I would say there would be less. There would be less lawyers, there would be less money spent in the Attorney General's office due to the fact that when you have an Attorney General that would be representing the citizens of the state of Alaska rather than one person in the state of Alaska, that you may end up with less suits filed because you would have people, you would be ruling in favor of some of the people and looking for ways rather than looking for ways to protect one individual. So, to me, you may end up less, and until somebody could sit down and show me in facts and figures that it could be contrary to that, I think it's hypothetical.
Mr. Ward?
Yes, if I can, and I'm curious. Taking into account everything that has happened, and it's a philosophical one, but I like your opinion as Attorney General. Do you think that your office as an Attorney General is an elected position, do you think that your office would be up to work as along lines Mr. Schultz has just stated, as a buffer to be able to say no between administration and legislature instead of working for one or the other, since we do have states that the Attorney General is hired by the legislature and not by the governor, and then we have some others where they're hired by the people, elected by them. I'd just like to have your feelings on this.
Well, I think that probably goes again to what I perceive as a fundamental perception problem. What I would say to you is that on that particular question, we believe in the Attorney General's office that historically that's the function that we have been performing, only we are far more quiet about that function since the Attorney General is not elected in this state. So in answer to your question, I think that the buffering you're referring to occurs constantly in terms of the legal advice that we give agencies. And as I say, a lot of it is straightening out agencies to make sure that they're complying with the statutes which you pass and complying with the procedural due process requirements and hearings affecting members of the public. So there is a constant corrective presence there, which again is not necessarily mentioned. And just touching on Representative Schultz's question, if I may, the information I'm giving you with respect to the need of the governor and agencies to hire attorneys is based upon the historical evolution in other states of the elected Attorney General's office. That is, the elected Attorney General always spawns the creation of attorneys in the governor's office and the other agencies simply because it's necessary, in their view, to have an independent voice within those particular agencies that is not someone loyal to an elected competing public official. So that is probably the inevitable trend, because I just don't see any way around it in this state unless you make adjustments in the way that the elected Attorney General has relates to the governor. And those off the top of my head, I don't know what you could do to minimize that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gorsuch. Although we do have 150 attorneys presently working for us, that seems like enough no matter what we do, but then just seems like an awful lot of them.
Mr. Larson.
Yes, just a brief question. I asked Mr. Boyko this question on his definition of an attorney general, and he said the lawyer of the people. Do you agree, disagree, or add or subtract from that?
I believe that the appointed attorney general functions substantially the same way that an elected attorney general does. And I believe at lower cost and with the same results, but again, I say it's a perception problem more than an actual problem.
Who is the attorney general the attorney for, in your opinion?
The attorney general is the attorney appointed by the governor, and the attorney general responds to the public on behalf of the executive branch. There is a very definite attorney-client relationship that exists in the appointed system. There's no question about it. But with respect to representing the people, I think the role of the attorney general in dealing with people is, again, fundamentally to keep the bureaucracy honest when it deals with the public. And I submit that that's what we do on a daily basis.
Thank you.
Are there any more questions for Mr. Gorsuch? If not, Mr. Gorsuch, thank you very much for your visit, for coming down here and staying as long as you did due to your busy schedule. It was very nice of you to come down and let us hear your viewpoints.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I enjoyed it.
I would like to go to Fairbanks. We have one person to give testimony, and I want to apologize to him because of some of the conversation we've had here with the Attorney General and the committee. You want to go ahead, Mr. Olson?
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Randy Olson. I've lived in Alaska all of my life, well, except for 18 months of it when my folks moved up. I'm an attorney. I've lived in Fairbanks my whole life. The question, several thoughts I have, I'll be very brief, is that I've always seen the concept of electing the Attorney General come up in relationship to the popular election of judges. And while I haven't thought that much about the Attorney General, I can see that some support for this concept might be a little bit of an overflow and might be being misread by some representatives. I'm sympathetic to the idea of having the electorate have a vote in it. At the same time, I personally don't feel that the concept is meritorious. That might alienate some representatives there right off the top, but that's my opinion. That's where I'm coming from. Mr. Boyko apparently criticizes a potential for abuse. He concedes that generally the system has worked well and wants to draw away from a potential. I come from the idea that if it works, don't fix it, and that there are severe potential for harm with the elected Attorney General. Mr. Boyko criticized that the Attorney General now also being in supervision of criminal prosecution, and that leads logically to the concept that if you don't want the elected Attorney General to also have the same powers, then you're going to have to decentralize and make that a local. Well, you just can't strip power all the way down to nothing as long as we've got control. That's, I think his argument or his position is subject to that criticism. I worry about having an attorney general who, as elected, then is really a politician, or the best politician wins the position. He owes people. He has adversaries. He's got opponents. I think the system which we now have, in which the governor is elected, he then appoints the best legal head he can find, and then that decision rests on the governor's head. I think I think we've got a good system that works. The idea of having a lawyer for the people is strange to me, having, of course, always lived under the system we have here. People elect those who enact the laws. The people elect those who enforce the laws now through the governor. I think we have enough accountability. I see some problems in fracturing the executive branch. We have a balance of powers between the judiciary, the legislature, and the executive branch now. I don't see a purpose of fracturing the executive branch. Those are my thoughts. I think those ideas would it's hard to take a position that the population should not be able to grant an advisory vote. At the same time, I am opposed to the concept. I don't see any reason why it can't be nipped right here at this time. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Did you have a question, yes. Mr. Ward?
Thank you. Mr. Olson, I'm wondering, because I'm not that familiar with Fairbanks, and since, you know, all I can go by is what I've tried to gather from asking people whether or not they want an elected attorney general, and where you live, 75% of your neighbors want that. And I'm just wondering, since you're an attorney...
I'm not hearing any question. I don't know if the gentleman is approaching the microphone or not. I can't hear anything.
Can you hear me now?
Did you hear him then?
No, I did not.
Let's use this.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Yes, this is Representative Jerry Ward. I'm the sponsor of the bill, and I to recap what I said 75% of your neighbors have requested that they would like to have an elected attorney general. I understand that you are a member of the Bar Association, so I think that your opinion is very valid, and I can understand why you have that opinion. I don't know how we how you got to the election of the judges part, so that's another matter, but I pose this basic question to you now, and that is that, do you think that the appointments, all the prosecutors, all the district attorneys, all the power that flows from the appointment of this person, who, incidentally, we've never had an attorney general that didn't work on the campaign to elect a governor yet in the state of Alaska and be named on their campaign committee, I wonder how it would be more political to know up front, before the election ballot box of the governor, who the attorney general was going to be. So, thank you very much.
So I understand the question, other than what you're advocating is that the people at least voting for the governor should know who his nominee might be, or at least who they're going to have as an attorney general, that this process would give that advantage. Is that the question?
The question basically was, is that regardless of which attorney general you pick in the past, the four or five of them that were there, they all worked on the various governors' campaigns. And the governors were, in fact, paying off some form of a political alignment because of the philosophy and plus of these people getting out, collecting money, door knocking for them or whatever. And do you think that is an appropriate procedure for you yourself? I don't know if you're the largest law firm in Fairbanks, but if you got behind the next governor candidate and helped elect him and responsible for it, then you'd be in a very good position to be appointed attorney general, but yet you may not be competent. You know, I would have no way of knowing.
Would you care to respond, sir?
I understand the concern. I feel in some cases that we may have had some attorney generals which I certainly would not have voted for, and I was not happy to see them in that position. In general, I think our system works, though, and that's why I just support the system currently as it's operating.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Are we going off the network now?
Yes, we can.
Fine, thank you. We're going to continue our meeting for a few moments. Representative Locker, I believe we said before we went all through this that he did not answer. He did not answer a question. Would you like to rephrase the question so he can give you an answer?
I think he knows my question.
I forgot what the question was.
The question was, what history has he been able to bring forward that would lead him to believe that this bill and an advisory vote would ever bear fruit? Has the legislature in the past accepted and acted on affirmatively on an advisory vote?
If I may, not to my knowledge, I not that I know of, but then again, Representative Flocker, you and I weren't here.
Oh, yes.
Mr.
Why? No, we weren't in the legislature.
Oh.
Could you recall, Mr. Miller?
Mr. Chairman, I can only—I think there's been at least a couple of advisory votes, but I can't recall what they are except one, and that is the unicameral legislature proposition. It passed the vote of the people,
but the legislature has never done anything about it. So it's another reason why I believe that advisory votes are worthless.
There's someone in the audience, Mr. Chairman, who's not
here. Is there someone who wish...
Well, you didn't find anything in your research either, led you to believe either way.
The only thing that I find, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, is the fact that I am here, and if I have an advisory vote, I'll do it. I don't know what their problem was. Thank goodness we got a bunch of new freshmen.
Mr. Chairman, let me respond to that. The advisory vote is still on the ballot. If Mr. Ward here feels responsible to carry out the mandate of the people and wants to introduce a unicameral legislature bill, I think it would be very well received in many quarters. So you can't cop out by saying that he wasn't here when that vote was taken, because it's subsequent to when the vote was taken that's the important time element. So if he's committed to carrying out the wishes of the people, he should introduce a bill on that subject.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Locker. I'm sorry, Mr. Schultz.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I just wonder, when was that taken?
Oh, 4 or 6 years ago, something like that. I can't remember the year.
Is it, just a comment, I'm from Nebraska, which is the only state that has the unicameral legislature. And to my knowledge, those people would not go from a unicameral legislature to a bicameral. It would be defeated just 100% right down the line. Very effective. That's it. However, that's neither here nor there. I was just wondering when they come up. I think it would have to go, if it's that old, it would have to come up before the people. But I would certainly always, on an advisory vote from the people of my district, if they overwhelmingly came out in support of, I would introduce legislation as such and try to get them backing on it. I would feel that way.
I think we're afield here now.
Are we?
Because we're not talking about bicameral legislation. We're talking about the election of the Attorney General. Yes. I noted Senator Fritz here. Did you have any testimony for this particular bill we're hearing today?
Sure.
Would you care to do it?
Thank you.
Your name and affiliation for the record, please.
I'm a Republican. No. Fritz Pettyjohn, representing South Anchorage in the State Senate. I just came from another committee hearing, so I talked with Representative Ward about coming down here. You have before you a bill to put on the ballot, the question of whether or not the Attorney General should be elected.
I think you have it in front of you, sir.
Okay. Well, I am certainly in favor of that. I happen to be in favor of people being able to make their feelings known in an official manner rather than polls. We're always getting polls about what people want. Those are subject to a great deal of distortion. In my mind, by the way the poll is taken, the way the question's asked, the phrasing of the question. And something like this, I think, can be taken as the official view of the electorate, and I think it would pass quite handily, and I think it would give the momentum to the legislature to pass a constitutional amendment to this effect, electing the Attorney General. You know, I was for electing the Attorney General before I came down here, and since I'm a scarred veteran of over a year's service in the legislature now, my feelings have only gotten stronger about it. It's like you have two businessmen involved in a business deal, and they come across a legal point, and they're not sure, they're having an argument, which is right. One way you interpret it, the one businessman will be given a definite advantage. If you interpret the legal point the other way, the other guy will get a definite advantage. And so the one businessman says, well, I'll tell you what, we'll just sell this. Let's go ask my attorney and ask him what he thinks about this. So you go to the businessman's attorney, and sure enough, by son of a gun, he interpreted it in the manner that's going to benefit his client. And the other businessman is just supposed to shake his head and say, well, you know, you got the legal opinion, so I guess we'll just have to go that way and give you the advantage on this deal. And that's sort of the way we operate down here. We get the Attorney General's opinion on all kinds of things, whether a bill is constitutional, whether the action of the legislature is proper, any manner of things. When you want to know what the law is, you don't file a lawsuit and get it from a judge. You ask the Attorney General. And people lose sight of the fact during that whole process that what you're getting is the opinion of an attorney who has a client who has an interest, very likely, in the question that you've asked him. And that is a little different than going to an impartial judge. So because of the misconception that surrounds Attorney General's opinions, I think they're sometimes used improperly, interpreted improperly. And I think the solution to this situation is to elect an Attorney General who will be independent, who will give legal advice without coloring it to favor either side in an individual area.
Mr. Miller, do you have a question for Senator?
Yeah, Senator, what makes you think you're going to get an impartial judgment when the very fellow you're asking may be planning to run for governor against the person that he's dealing with in the very next election?
And that happened. He's got a much better chance if he is not representing a client.
Well, it's just the opposite. If he's planning on running against this guy in the next election, which is going to be in the case where you're going to have two properly elected officials in the state of Alaska, discounting the lieutenant governor. So you've got two people who are you know up for election. If you can't think that that's going to be the most forceful, antagonistic, unbiased, or more biased, most biased confrontation in politics, I can't conceive of putting together anything that could be more biased against an impartial decision.
So, you know, why do they have it in, 44 states, then, if it's such an intolerable situation? I don't think it is. I think experience has shown that it could be done quite easily.
Well, when Alaska put together the 49th Constitution, it was regarded as a model, and this is one of the reasons, because we've got accountability in this state, and a lot of states are moving toward the Alaska model.
Name one that's moving toward the appointment of the Attorney General by the governor.
Maybe one that's going the other way. I mean, I think we're in a standoff on that. But it's
well, you mentioned the movement. You know,